Mr. Kaminsky.
May it please the court. Appellant petitioner Frank Miramonte and myself thank you for the opportunity to present an issue for decision that, as of this date, appellant petitioner has been pursuing since January of 2004.
Would you speak up, please, sir?
Excuse me. I'm sorry, Judge. That a petitioner has not received a decision regarding, and that is the issue that appellant petitioner's procedural due process rights were violated in affecting his disciplinary downgrade. As of this date, appellant's due process claim was presented in writing to the administrative judge. It was in his pre-hearing submissions, and that's contained at the addendum to petitioner's brief at page 3, letter C of the addendum. Evidence was presented at hearing concerning this issue through the statements and testimony of the citing official, and yet the administrative judge simply did not pass upon that issue.
But I'm a little confused.
Sure.
He did pass upon a second, you know, the racial epithet issue.
Yes.
He did pass upon, there was one in the spec, and that's the one the AJ passed upon. So you're not saying that the AJ exceeded his authority in a way that violated your client's due process rights, right?
Not with regard to that issue, no.
Okay.
There is an issue, and the information is contained in the joint appendix, that the deciding official in this case, who also served as some sort of a collector of information when the disciplinary action was brought to his attention, wrote an email to his superiors that on September the 3rd, the issue regarding the subordinate employee, Wanda McIntosh, the clerk in the Office of In-Plant Support in the plant in St. Louis, that is the issue, and that is the issue that's outlined at in the addendum at page 3, letter C.
That was not in the specification, right?
Correct.
And the administrative judge didn't consider that, but in affirming the agency's decision, correct?
Well, I'm...
So I'm having a hard time figuring out where the due process violation is.
Right. And I think you're saying that the AJ made an independent penalty determination in light of the facts and circumstances that he considered in this case?
Well, that's the...
It's not clear from the decision. It seems to be that that's what the AJ did. But the deciding official is the one that considered this and downgrading petitioner, and it's scattered throughout the record. The deciding official saying that bridges were burned by the appellant with regard to his relationships and In-Plant Support, and all of these things we submit, petitioner submits to the court, was essentially the deciding official saying that I believe that a racial epithet was directed at a co-employee on September the 3rd, and that's the reason why a petitioner can never go back to this office again.
But it wasn't in the spec, and there were lots of other things in the specification.
There were
lots of other
admitted
conduct. So aren't there, don't we have case law where even if it had been in the spec, and even if it were found to be not true, we could still, the AJ, and we could still affirm action taken?
I think, Judge, you may be leading up to the issue of harmless error. There is some overlap between a due process problem and a harmless error. Harmless error is that even if the same decision would have been made but for this error, even in light of the error happening, the same decision would be made, the error is not harmless. With regard to due process, the law is quite clear, and it's the law from this court, it's the Stone decision. Is the information that was considered new and material? This was something outside the specifications. It was new and material. It was not part of what the appellant was charged with. No notice, no explanation where this came from, no opportunity to respond. It's pretty clear that that's what happened. Additionally, this isn't duplicative. This isn't information that just affirms or corroborates or reaffirms some other allegation. This was something that the deciding official considered that was in addition to those specifications outlined in the notice of proposed removal. additionally.
So even if you were to prevail on that, we send it back, the agency does a do-over, it says, not considering that, there was sufficient basis upon which to sustain the demotion, whatever it is that happened. End of story, right? I mean, is there
That's
any doubt in your mind that that would be the result? Any doubt whatsoever?
I don't know. Yeah, if that's what happened. Effectively, at this point in time, the petitioner has served a 2.5-year suspension from his job in implant support, from his professional career. I think that it is a possibility that that would not happen, that they would say, we screwed up, we considered things that we should not have considered, you've done your time, so to speak, with regard to your punishment, and it's over with. I don't know, there's no guarantee that that would happen. However, it's an issue that we've pressed throughout this case, and it just has never been addressed. Most importantly, Judge, with respect to the due process argument, was the information, and this comes from Stone again, was the information such that it was so likely to result in undue pressure to decide the case in a certain way? And that's where this allegation, the allegation concerning the incident on September 3rd, comes into play.
But wasn't there another incident that involved the same issue?
It was not the same issue. It was a racial epithet, but it was not the same issue. That individual, who's no longer in the office and has left the employment of the agency, said that that was something that really didn't bother him. It's conceivable that that is, if that specification were sustained again, that it wouldn't result in the same disciplinary action. And of course, it's possible the agency may try to fire the appellant, redo everything and say that this is something that you should have been fired for. I don't think that that's the case, but clearly, facts were considered that appellant had no notice of, that the deciding official said, and it's quoted in his deposition testimony, which he backed away from, that it certainly influenced my decision. And if you take that out of his decision, it's hard to say, in light of what's been created as a credibility issue now, that he would decide the same way. There is another issue, of course, on appeal, which is the appropriateness of the penalty. The petitioner understands that the standard of review is such that it's an abuse of discretion, arbitrary, capricious, otherwise not in accordance with the law. There's some overlap with the due process argument, again, in that he was not afforded procedures due him by law in affecting the action that has been appealed. But above and beyond that, and really it's conceded in the last 3 to 4 pages of the agency's brief, that there were a number of aggravating factors that were considered in this case that simply should not have been considered as aggravating factors. Those included plaintiff's alleged supervisory status. He was not a supervisor. He was a professional level employee in the office, not a supervisor to the woman that in the incident on September 3rd. That is unsupported by substantial evidence. There is not substantial evidence to support that consideration. Additionally, the agency considered as an aggravating factor, a serious aggravating factor, and the judge agreed with it, that there was, quote, trouble with the union. It never occurred. There was no trouble with the union. This was a single incident that should have been handled as a single incident, and they should have disciplined the...
But it seems to me you're asking us to do for a do-over on the trial. I mean, you were there at the hearing, or whoever was representing your client, and this evidence was going in, and you had a chance to cross-examine or to question it. So now you're challenging some of the evidence, and you're telling us this wasn't so, and you're asking us to reevaluate that in an area which you acknowledge is one which we rarely ever get involved with because there's so much deference on the Douglas factors as long as there's some consideration. Right?
Correct. With regard to those last 2 points that I just mentioned, Judge, I was at the hearing. I was the hearing attorney for the. There was no evidence about that because that's not what occurred. I don't know where in the record the judge. As you may notice, there's a footnote at the beginning of the AJ's initial decision. I issued this decision 6 months after the date of the hearing. I think he simply recalled the facts incorrectly. there was no evidence, there was no chance to oppose that evidence because it was never entered into evidence. It shouldn't have been considered in sustaining the disciplinary downgrade. Additionally, there's some other points that correspond with the fact that the agency inappropriately considered aggravating factors, which is that they failed to appropriately consider all of the relevant Douglas factors. Again, the standard of review is what it is. It's a high standard of review. However, at some point, when you have the agency considering the Douglas factors incorrectly, which the agency concedes, they use appellant's years of service against them. And it gets back to something that I was going to lead into with the court, which is what's really going on here. You know, in employment cases, it's often what's really going on here. And from appellant's point of view, what's really going on here is that the deciding official believed that these offensive statements were made on September the 3rd, and he therefore had to take the petitioner's career away from him and not allow him back into that office. And that's not what occurred. It's simply not what occurred. I'm going to save my final 4 minutes for rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Comiskey. Ms. Stewart?
Good morning. If I could just address this so-called due process argument. It's clear that, at least as to the incident with Mr. Meads that Judge Prost referenced, that it was outright rejected by the administrative judge at various points during the hearing. It's all over the transcript that the administrative judge just didn't buy the argument that there was insufficient notice as to the charge that Mr. Miramonte used a racial epithet and directed it toward Mr. Meads. As to the...
Is that a question of fact or is that a question of law?
I suppose that the petitioner is treating it as a question of law that was unaddressed. Factually, there's no dispute about it. The testimony is clear. The deciding official testified that... let me back up. Mr. Miramonte's defense essentially was, yes, I may have used the N-word, but I didn't mean it in a derogatory way. And the deciding official's testimony is clear. He didn't care what the intent or the state of mind behind the use of the word was. He thought it was inappropriate to be used in the workplace, and it was a sufficient basis to take some sort of disciplinary action against Mr. Miramonte, which is exactly what the deciding official did. As a legal matter, it appears that the petitioner thinks there needs to be a sentence or two to that effect in the initial decision. Otherwise, the initial decision is subject to being reversed for that reason alone, and the court's own precedent does not support that. It's in the record in the sense that repeatedly the administrative judge said it. You know, this argument does not bear the way that you're trying to make it bear. As to the other incident with Ms. McIntosh, the deciding official explained the situation with that as well. There was an email written the day of this incident, the day that... That certainly inappropriate and profane language was directed at Ms. McIntosh in front of the other people in this small insular work unit. And as a result of that, what happens is a lot of information is flowing in really in real time to Mr. Mossman, and the email reflects him trying to make sense of information flowing in all at the same time. As to the deposition testimony, he explained that too, that he misspoke, and his deposition testimony has been misunderstood by petitioner. And it's also clear from the record that at the time he made the decision to demote Mr. Miramonte, after the investigation, after everyone had their opportunity to state their side of the story, there was no belief that a racially derogatory term had been used on September 3rd, 2003. No doubt about that. And petitioner now would like to make that out as a credibility issue that the AJ was also obligated to address. First, again, the court's own precedent does not put that standard to the board's orders. Second, it's conceivable, based on the transcript and the record, that the AJ just did not see it as a credibility issue, that he was concerned about what did the deciding official believe at the time the decision was made, at the time the disciplinary action was taken. And if there was ever a credibility issue, it was clearly, implicitly at least, resolved in favor of the Postal Service.
So the bottom line on the due process is, to the extent it's predicated on reliance by the deciding official of an incident that was not covered in the spec and that he didn't have an opportunity to reply to, you just said that the AJ found and there's just no indication that that happened, right?
There's no indication that that happened. And as you pointed out, Judge Prost, even if we were to accept everything that petitioner has said about this incident with Ms. McIntosh, there's still the incident with Mr. Meads, which he is no longer contesting, where a very similar charge was made, and there's evidence about that. He's conceded he used the term, and Mr. Comiskey just suggested we don't know how Mr. Mossman would have decided if he had had a correct understanding about the incident with Ms. McIntosh. Well, we do. He has said, with respect to the Meads incident, it's an inappropriate term to be used in the workplace. I don't care what your intent is. I don't care if you're being rhetorical. I don't care if you mean it in a mean or derogatory way. It's not a word that should be spoken in the workplace. So we know what Mr. Mossman's views are about that issue. I don't know if the court has any questions as to the Douglas factors presented.
We're familiar with those.
You're familiar with Douglas. I'd imagine so, Your Honors. I mean, I'll just say on the Douglas factors, certainly it's within our discretion, and we take the position that discretion was exercised in a very reasonable manner in this case, that we have a person who has a track record of repeated conduct that's disruptive and disrespectful. He works in a small unit that's in a way very self-contained in what it does and interacts less frequently than other people in the plant. And he's demonstrated this pattern of blowing up at people, going off, you know, coming back the next day or having a cigarette and apologizing. And it seems that it just reached a point where his coworkers couldn't take it anymore. And as to this argument that mitigating factors weren't sufficiently considered, well, as we detailed in the brief, they were. The physical and mental health issues were considered. The length of his tenure and the lack of active discipline in his record was considered. The fact that Mr. Meade's own statements in the middle of that incident were provocative was considered.
We've read most of this in the brief, I think.
Okay. Well, I just wanted to have, if you have no questions, then I'll...
I didn't think we asked any.
Okay.
Thank you, Ms. Stewart.
Yeah.
Mr. Comiskey?
Thank you, Your Honor. I would just like to briefly again cover the issue with regard to what did occur on September the 3rd and how we know what the deciding official considered. He wrote it in his email. The petitioner was using profanity and racial epithets. When asked at his deposition, he said that the racial epithet was the N-word. On September the 3rd, I clarified that with him. He said, yes, I believe so. Then, when he was provided the opportunity to correct that testimony through his deposition correction sheet, he didn't attempt to correct what the agency now claims is something where he misspoke. However, when he was confronted with that statement at the hearing, at the trial, and after the trial was over, he did attempt to correct that testimony by providing the petitioner and myself a corrected deposition correction sheet, a second correction deposition correction sheet, where he does change that testimony after the trial is over. No opportunity to ask him about it, no opportunity to cross-examine him about it. That's where the credibility determination comes into play, because it's central to the due process argument of the appellant that if you believed this and you believed that petitioner burned his bridges, it seems that both of those things go hand in hand, and some sort of a determination, an acknowledgement of that issue has to be made so that an intelligent, informed appeal of the issue could be made if necessary. The judge disregarded it. To a certain extent, the agency and the petitioner are passing one another in the night like two ships. We're not arguing that the Lewis Meads incident regarding the epithet was a due process violation. Clearly there, and that's a fact issue. The judge believed that it happened. The judge also believed that Mr. Mees really thought nothing of it. He said, that's just the petitioner. That's just Frank. That's not what we're appealing. We're appealing what the deciding official believed on September the 3rd when several African-American employees reported to his office and said, we can't work with Frank anymore, and reportedly told him that racial epithets were being used when that just was not the case. Simply not the case. No evidence of that. Again, with regard to the Douglas factors, and I know that the court is familiar with those, and I don't want to belabor the point, but what really happened here is that one Douglas factor, the relationship with the coworkers, it's important, admittedly, but that was the single factor that was really given overriding consideration, as spelled out in the briefs, that was the factor that the deciding official put all his weight upon, and the board has said, that's not what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to look through the prism of all the other Douglas factors and say, well, look, this guy has almost 20 years of federal service. He has a discipline-free record. All of these things go into consideration before you propose or decide to take someone's career away from them. I appreciate your patience today.
Thank you, Mr. Kaminsky.
Thank you.
Final case this morning is Globe Savings versus the United States.